Gold prices have crashed. Gold prices have crashed. Since 2011, gold has plummeted more than 25%, and the worst may not yet be over. The Profit Strategy Newsletter at ETFGuide.com warned its subscribers the gold bubble would pop, and it has. Our gold alert given to subscribers in early 2013 resulted in a 500% gain. What happens next in the gold market will shock the entire globe. Join today at ETFGuide.com and get a $50 bonus by using promo code SAVE50.
You're listening to the Index Investing Show. This is America's only weekly program focused on the important stock and bond indexes and the financial products that track them.
And now presenting your host,
Ron DeLegge. Ron DeLegge.
All right, welcome to the program. Great to have you with us. Coming up on today's show, what do gold and the 2004 New York Yankees have in common? We're going to talk about that and use some sports analogies to help gold investors, gold bugs, to get their mind right. We're also going to get into your investment portfolios. We'll talk about anything that's on your mind, a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF that you want to talk about, or investment strategy. Call the show, 877-711-5611. You can also tweet the program live at Index Show is my Twitter handle. My email address, ron@indexshow.com. You are in for such a treat on today's program. My guest is going to be Charles Ellis. He is the author of a book titled Winning the Loser's Game. It's a classic. It was written back in the 70s. It's in its sixth edition. And it's called, again, Winning the Loser's Game, Timeless Strategies for Successful Investing. Charles Ellis coming up in the third segment of today's show. You will not want to miss that. And it's going to be a blast. So stay tuned for that. Again, we're here, 877-711-5611. That's the number. This is a live program. Give us your first name along with your city, and we will get to you. Now, let's take a look at what happened in financial markets this past week. Stocks weakening. Really, any surprises here? A lot of people probably taking some gains, realizing some gains here in the final stretch of 2013. U.S. stocks did slide a little bit. You know, the media used it as an excuse to say, well, it's fear. It's fear about the Federal Reserve and their big meeting this upcoming week. Oh, this is going to be, you know, the market is freaking out. Well, not really. Not really. This market is still up very strongly. We saw a very small pullback there in the S&P 500 falling about or declining about 1.5%, still above 1775, the Dow falling about that same amount, now at 15,755. So stocks, U.S. stocks, still in pretty good shape. And by the way, outperforming international stocks very easily and absolutely blowing away emerging market stocks. The latter has lagged pretty much all year long and continues to do so. Now, In other news, the U.S. government sold its last stake in General Motors this past week. The U.S. Treasury Department saying that as GM's shares hit a new high of $40.90 a share, they unloaded some of that position. Not some of it, all of it. And taxpayers, according to the Treasury Department, recouped around $39 billion of their original $49.5 billion investment to rescue the automaker. In the housing market, the average mortgage rate in the U.S. Declined slightly, according to Freddie Mac, for the week ending this past Friday. The 30-year fixed rate mortgage averaged around 4.42%. And so we see mortgage rates still historically low. But if we look at the previous year, and we've talked about this investment theme of higher interest rates, you look at the 30-year fixed rate mortgage now at around 4.42%, You compare that to a year ago, we were at 3.32%. So about 1% less.
We have not seen stocks connected to the housing market or consumers the meltdown because of higher interest rates.
Now, if rates continue in their upward trajectory, say another 1%, I think we're going to start to see some of these companies begin to feel the pain. But so far, so good. Also, in other news, Bernard Madoff revealed that his 17, well, basically this goes back to a couple years ago, but this has been in the news of Madoff being revisited. So what was the total nuclear bomb in terms of money lost from Madoff's scheme? And you'll notice I called it a Madoff scheme. I did not refer to it as a Ponzi scheme. There's a big difference. Ponzi stole millions. Madoff stole billions. Do you see a difference? Why are we calling it a Ponzi scheme? It's a Madoff scheme. It's a billion. It's a multi-billion dollar scheme to rip off people. And you notice I didn't say investors, because they were never investors, the people that had money with Madoff. They were gamblers. That's what they were. So you just learned two things. Number one, what Bernard did was not a Ponzi scheme. It was a Madoff scheme. Ponzi stole millions. Madoff stole billions. That's the difference. That's where we make a demarcation between high-level financial perversity and low-level financial perversity. High-level, Madoff scheme. Low-level, Ponzi scheme. So there's a difference. There's about another $7 billion, in case you were wondering, in potential recoveries, and it's now hinging on two big court cases pending in New York. They're fighting over this last $7 billion. Irving Pickard, the trustee for Madoff's victims and a couple of financial institutions. So we'll see which people wind up with that $7 billion. 877-711-5611 is the number. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. This is a live program. If you would like to join us, you want to talk about Madoff schemes, you want to talk about your own investment portfolio, maybe a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF, I'm game. We're seeing some of those social media stocks begin to heat up. Facebook was added to the S&P 500, and we saw that particular stock, ticker symbol FB, rise pretty nicely. We also saw Twitter rising above $50 a share, and boy, you want to talk about lofty valuations. Twitter's got a great brand. They've got great prowess when it comes to marketing, but that valuation, I'm telling you, it's richly, richly valued stock. And just to give you some idea of how richly valued Twitter is, I mean, look at that market cap on Twitter. Ticker symbol TWTR, that's the ticker symbol for Twitter. That market cap is $32 billion. This is for a company with hardly any earnings, people. $32 billion. By comparison, Netflix has a $21 billion market cap. So you want to talk about, both companies are in nosebleed valuation area. Certainly a value investor wouldn't touch any of these stocks with a 1,000-foot pole. But I'm just trying to give you some relativity, some perspective on how richly valued Twitter is. $32 billion versus a $21 billion market cap. And at least what we could say about Netflix is they've got some earnings. They've actually got a business plan. They've got customers. You know, Twitter has a lot of non-paying customers, but how they're going to convert that into actual revenue is anybody's guess. 877-711-5611 is the number. We're here. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. Coming up a little bit later on today's program, we're going to talk with Charlie Ellis. He is the author of a book. It's a Wall Street classic titled Winning the Loser's Game, Timeless Strategies for Successful Investing. And I cannot wait to interview him. It's going to be a great interview, and it's something I know all of you are looking forward to. We're also going to talk about gold. What does gold have in common with the 2004 New York Yankees? That and much more right here on the Index Investing Show. I'll be right back.
The Index Investing Show with Lon DeLegio.
This is the Index Investing Show. You can tweet the program live at Index Show. You can also email me, Ron at indexshow.com. My December ETF Profit Strategy newsletter is out. Go get a copy. We're working on the January newsletter. That should be released sometime next week. And this particular month, we talk about stocks have reached a permanently high plateau. And that, of course, is a sarcastic quote that I've robbed from Yale professor Irving Fisher, who declared that very thing. Stocks have reached a permanently high plateau. He said that right before stocks crashed in 1929. And so we've taken that same phrase and we've used that in our December ETF Profit Strategy newsletter sarcastically to show all the reasons why that is absolutely wrong. There are many, many warning flags. Can't cite all of them to you on the air, but the main thing here is we've got to be able to make some money from this, because the market will turn. There will be a correction. We will see a spike in the VIX, which represents stock market volatility. We haven't had much of it. Now, we've seen the VIX here move up over the past week. It danced with 15.5, 16, and it's been stuck most of the year around 12 and 13. So pretty big move here lately for the VIX, but I think it's just the early innings of a potential bull market in the VIX, in volatility, and that will be good for those of you that are correctly positioned. And what is the correct position? Well, you can read the December ETF Profit Strategy newsletter. Go to etfguide.com, and when you go there, just click on the Profit Strategy newsletter. Use promo code TRADEUP, and you'll save $50. Now, one of the topics I want to get to is what do gold and the 2004 New York Yankees have in common? And this is something we can all appreciate, even if we're not sports fans. And before I get into that, I want to give you a quick recap of where major financial markets stand so far this year. And we do this in a minute or less to give you perspective on the global financial markets. Ticker symbol SPY represents the S&P 500, up 23.5% since the beginning of the year. International stocks from around the globe, like Japan, United Kingdom, Australia, VEA is the ETF ticker symbol that covers this area, ahead by almost 13%. VWO covers emerging market stocks from countries like China and Brazil and India. And we talked about this one. This area has pretty much lagged all year long, and it continues to post a negative 9.5% performance return. So emerging market stocks still stuck in reverse. Gold is another area that is stuck in reverse. GLD is the spider gold shares, down 26.3%. Total U.S. bond market, BND, is the ticker symbol for this area, down around 4.5%. And those long-term bonds still getting creamed. We're talking about bonds with maturities of 20 years or longer. And if you own any, take a look at your portfolio. Time to eliminate the position altogether. Or if you need to keep a position, definitely lighten up. VNQ follows U.S. REITs, also known as Real Estate Investment Trust, down around 2% and lagging, no doubt because of the fact that higher rates are putting some pressure on these REITs. You take a look at some of the top-performing industry sectors, and we've talked about these areas all year long, and they continue to lead. Healthcare stocks, XLV, ahead by 35% and easily outperforming the broader S&P 500. Now, that ticker symbol again, XLV, represents just the health care stocks within the S&P 500. Now, how about consumer discretionary stocks? This area, too, has been absolutely a wonderful performer. XLY up 36%. And then one other area that's outperformed pretty easily the S&P 500 is industrial stocks, XLI, ahead by just over 31%. So let's talk about gold. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to the Index Investing Show, 877-711-5611. We're here if you want to talk about a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF. I'm game. Let's talk about what gold and the 2004 New York Yankees have in common. Going back to October of 2004, do we remember what happened at that momentous time period? The New York Yankees did the absolutely unthinkable. They blew a 3-0 lead and lost the World Series against their arch rivals, the Boston Red Sox. Now, this is something we can all appreciate, even if we don't follow sports. It was an epic collapse. And I have to ask the question, is a similar epic collapse happening in the precious metals market? Those of you that own gold, silver, platinum, palladium, are we seeing that same epic collapse in this market? Well, let's look at history. After racking up a 144% gain from late 2008 to mid-2011, look at what's happened since. Gold prices have choked. Just like the 2004 New York Yankees, they've choked their lead against other investments, and they've crashed over 35%. Now, no doubt, bullion enthusiasts and gold bugs and others with their head like ostriches buried in the sand are still in denial. But the truth is that the luster of gold's gains have definitely faded. Forget about the Federal Reserve's trillion-dollar quantitative easing. Gold got a kick out of that early in the game, but late in the game, it's begun to fade. So we look at the Spider Gold shares, ticker symbol GLD, which has lost or erased 35.4% of its performance over the past 28 months. Now, in reality, we've got this massive fixation on gold's 12-year streak of consecutive yearly gains from 2000 to 2012. That's all you hear in the media. Oh, gold has gone up 12 straight years. But that's largely been masked by a bear market that began 2 years ago. So if you've just been following gold or investing in it based on its consecutive yearly gains, well, you've been suckered. Sorry to break it to you. You've been suckered because that the last 2 years of those gains has been largely masked by this nasty, nasty bear market, which began in mid-2011. So the question is, how has gold performed against other major investments from when the Fed's QE began in late 2008 until now? Well, let's look at it. Let's tear the clothes off and strip the asset classes to their nakedness and look at them. So gold's relative performance since late 2008, when the Fed's QE began, gold is up with a nice gain of 60%. But how does that compare to stocks? How does that compare to other asset classes like real estate, investment trusts? Well, gold's 60% gain lags the S&P 500, which over that same period, from late 2008 until now, S&P 500's gained almost 105%, blowing away gold. How about emerging market stocks gaining almost 80% and blowing away gold? How about U.S. REITs gaining more than 92%? And that's not even including dividends, easily blowing away gold. So from that perspective, gold has been an absolute dog. So we're going to talk a little bit more later in the show about how to profit from the great gold crash, because it's not over. I know they're saying it's over, but it's not over. And by the way, coming up next, you are going to hear my program guest. His name is Charles Ellis. He's the author of a book called Winning the Loser's Game, Timeless Strategies for Successful Investing. Stay tuned for that if you'd like to join us. 877-711-5611. I'm here. I'll be right back.
The Index Investing Show with Lon DeLegge.
Meet Joe Investor. He's nice and he means well, but Joe Investor always misses the really big investment opportunities. For example, Joe Investor missed last year's 16% gain in small company stocks. And the year before that, he missed the 33% gain in long-term U.S. Treasury ETFs. And what about this year? Well, like all the times before, Joe Investor once again is all about lost opportunities and missed chances. Are you always missing out, just like Joe Investor? The Profit Strategy Newsletter at ETFGuide.com will help you to stay on top of major investment trends so you never miss another big opportunity. Join today and get a $50 bonus by using promo code JOE50. Our monthly newsletter, our weekly picks, and our technical forecast will keep you ahead of the pack. Go to ETFGuide.com to get started. And one more thing, promise yourself to never ever miss another big investment opportunity.
How can individual investors make better decisions, better choices? Here to talk with us about that is Charlie Ellis, author of the classic book, Winning the Loser's Game. It's in its sixth edition. Go pick up a copy at Amazon.com. Charlie Ellis, welcome to the Index Investing Show. Great to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
Now, you say that most investment managers and individual investors, being in a sustained state of denial, are holding on to a set of romantic beliefs developed in a long-gone era of different markets. Tell us more.
50 years ago, nobody did active investing. So those who were the pioneers and got started with it had a difficult time. Trades on the New York Stock Exchange averaged 40 cents a share. You couldn't do a trade of more than 3,000 or 4,000 shares, even if you called Gus Levy at Goldman Sachs and asked for a bid. It was no research coming from any established organizations. And if you wanted a quote of a stock, you had to call a broker and ask, what's the latest price on such and such a stock, and what's the high and the low for the day, and so on. It was a completely different world. But it was the very, very beginning of a wonderful era in active investment management, where you could actually expect you could do better than the competition. And as you did better and better, more and more people started coming into the field, and it got stronger and faster and more exciting, and more people came into the field, and it looked like it was just going to go on that way forever. But being a realistic observer, you'd have to say, if too many people start doing this, it's not going to be all that rewarding for any one or small group of people. And that happened somewhere around 1990, that the transition shifted over, and the cost of hiring those extraordinarily talented people was enough to offset what they could actually hope to gain. And since then, and it's gotten increasingly so, it's now so many people, so talented, with so much information accessible to everybody, that it's no longer an exciting opportunity. It's actually more costly than it's worth, and it's a game, in brief, that's a game not worth playing. And if people stay with what they remember, the hero portfolio manager, the brilliant analyst, the double on the stock, that kind of exciting thing that did happen 30 or 40 years ago and fairly often, it doesn't happen. And it's not going to happen because the quality competition is so very, very good. Let me give you just a couple of specifics. There are Mike Bloomberg's wonderful machine, the Bloomberg. There are 300,000. Bloomberg, which will provide anybody who's got one all the information they could imagine being able to use anytime they want it. Big, big change. The SEC has mandated that any company that releases any information of any usefulness in investing to any investor must make it available instantly to all other investors. The number of people who are deeply involved in trying to figure out what's the best price for any one security and for any one industry group or for any one market has gone up from almost none to, well, for example, CFA program, the Chartered Financial Analyst, to now 120 people who are coming into the CFA program when they pass the exam. And if there are enough people competing, trying to figure out what the price would be, you know, and I know, that sooner or later they will do such a good job that it's very, very hard to beat them. And that's where we are today.
Charlie Ellis joining us. He's author of Winning the Loser's Game. It's in its sixth edition, Timeless Strategies for Successful Investing. His latest book is titled What It Takes, Seven Secrets of Success from the World's Greatest Professional Firms. Go pick up copies at Amazon.com. Now, we've read and heard about the Ivy League portfolio. What is it, and is it something that investors should try to imitate with their own portfolios?
Give a full and complete explanation would take a couple of hours, so I'm not going to do that. But I would put to you that led by Yale and Harvard and to extent Princeton and Stanford and to some extent MIT also, a group of university portfolio managers managing the endowments of their universities re-examined investment management and came to the view that there were some opportunities in the total market spectrum that were more attractive than being active investors in the well-known, most famous name listed stock. And so they moved towards things, very unusual things, like venture capital. They moved into things like private equity financing when it was just getting started. They moved into things like timber when nobody was interested in timber and the paper industry was selling off a huge amount of forest land because they weren't getting paid for owning it. And they moved to a different concept of long-term investing. Keep in mind, these are very long-lived institutions that think comfortably in terms of 100 years, have histories that go back over 300 years. These are people who think very, very long-term. And in that context, with good spending rule discipline, they were able to do something remarkably skillful and creative. It captured the imagination of many other people. But every one of them would say, in summary, after explaining what they've done and why they've done it, they would say, do not try this on your own. Do not do this at home. If you don't have a professional staff of two or three dozen people who are deeply experienced and a wonderful network of relationships, you will not be able to be successful at this kind of investing. Please do not try it unless you've got all of the requisite skills in place, in which case, you might very well want to try it, but be sure about having the special skills.
Now, we know that index investing is the best way for most people to invest. There's kind of a debate about what the best vehicles, the best way to do that is. Is it the traditional index mutual fund, or is it the index ETF? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm indifferent between an index fund and ETF. If you're really long-term, you probably do an index fund. If you're really fairly short-term, 2, 3, 4 years, you probably do an ETF. What's really important is that you get a broad diversification in high-grade securities at low, low, low fees, and that will make it all work out for you.
What about smart beta strategies that try to outperform traditional market cap-weighted indexes? Is this a new innovation or simply a word trick?
I think you might look more carefully. I wouldn't use word trick, but I do think there is always a risk in anything quantitative data mining. And if you study all the data, look for any kind of a correlation, you will find correlation. And those who have done a more careful examination of quote-unquote smart beta would agree immediately. Clever name. The branding smart beta sounds like it's got to be something special. And if you look at the data, it turns out to be primarily low price to book or value stocks, relatively high dividend relative to price, so high yield, and relatively small capitalization. In the time period that most people studied in the reporting of quote-unquote smart beta happens to have had a better run, but it has no meaning in terms of predictable better run in the future. And nobody's been able to come up with a way of articulating that this would do better in the long run than just accepting market capitalization. I know the standard argument. Do you remember a couple of years ago, GE was clearly overpriced and has come rocketing way down since then? Fine, but there are other stocks that were way underpriced and gone rocketing way up, and trying to figure out which ones are which ones or which ones are when, turns out that the market-weighted simple index, although really vanilla proposition turns out to be about as good as anything. And there's always a risk when you do something clever of being caught being a little bit too clever. And I think there's a big risk of that in everything that I've seen so far labeled smart beta. Do I wish I'd come up with the name smart beta? Sure. Practice that name. Does it have real meaning? Not for buyers or investors. For the people who get a fee override for the terminology when it's offered, yes, it's good for them. More power to them.
World-class investment ideas and strategies from Charles Ellis. He's author of Winning the Loser's Game, 6th edition, Timeless Strategies for Successful Investing. His latest book, What It Takes, 7 Secrets of Success from the World's Greatest Professional Firms. Charlie, great interview. We hope to catch up with you again soon.
Thanks so much, Ron.
This is the Index Investing Show. I'm Ron DeLegge. More when we return. I'll be right back.
The Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
All right, welcome back from the break. And I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. Charles Ellis, I mean, just a champion of a guy. And the main thing here is a real forward and progressive thinker. I mean, he was writing about index investing back in the 70s when people were still saying that that it was a mediocre way to invest. And, of course, here we are, what? 30, 40 years later, and people, the data has continued to show the actual historical data that index investing is actually a superior way to invest. And it's superior because of the fact that by keeping your investment costs low and investing in a broadly diversified securities via index funds, whether they be index ETFs or index mutual funds, it has shown to be a timeless strategy. And you do that, and you'll outperform most of Wall Street. You'll also outperform your neighbor who's trying to pick stocks that beat the market. And meanwhile, what happens? They usually blow themselves up. For every one winner, they've got three losers or four losers. And the main thing here is that should be the foundation of your portfolio, other low-cost index funds. So make that the foundation of your portfolio. If you want to buy stocks, if you want to get venture capital, you want to invest in timber and other alternative areas or asset classes or trade into specific themes, you can do that with your play money, your money that's layered over your core or foundation of your portfolio. 877-711-5611. We're here. Please join us. As I mentioned earlier, my December newsletter at the ETF Guide, it's called the ETF Profit Strategy Newsletter, is out. Go pick up a copy. We also did our monthly income trade for December in our ready-to-go ETF portfolios, the income mix portfolio. How much did we generate for December? Well, based on a $100,000 all ETF portfolio, we generated $700 for our December monthly income trade. We will be doing our monthly income trade for January in another 2 weeks. So you will not want to miss it. We sell covered calls every single month. The idea is to generate maximum income. And over the past year, our income mix portfolio has averaged dividend-wise in terms of income generation over 10.5%. So go again to etfguide.com, click on the Ready Go portfolios, and you can follow our next income trade coming up for January 2014. Now, let's get into some of your tweets. Can I get my music? Now, we talked in that interview with Charlie Ellis about smart beta, which is basically code for I'm trying to beat traditional market cap weighted indexes by various quantitative strategies. I'm taking certain stocks and overweighting them by their financial factors, or maybe I'm equal weighting them or whatever. So we had this conversation on our Twitter feed at Index Show is my Twitter handle. And Eric Balchunas, he is a reporter over at Bloomberg. Here's what he had to say about smart beta. It implies the opposite is dumb, and it's a bit misleading, but it's damn catchy. It's like Obamacare versus ACA. He also mentioned, or another email or tweet rather, mentioned from an analyst, John Gabriel at Morningstar. He said that strategy indexes is very fitting, a fitting description. Hopefully the cement hasn't dried on using smart beta, as it is a very viral term. And the thing here that you need to remember about smart beta is it's great, great marketing. That's what it really boils down to. It's great marketing. And it's also a lot of data mining, because what they're doing in these smart beta equity indexes is basically overweighting small cap or small company stocks and value stocks. Take a look at all these smart beta indexes, and that's exactly what they're doing. So the point is that we know that value stocks and small cap stocks have outperformed over long periods of time historically. But now the question is, will that be the case in the future? And that's the problem with smart beta, and that's the problem with data mining, period, is what worked in the past won't necessarily work in the future. I mean, that's just a fact. So we've also got a couple of nice interactions here. This one on gold, I sent out a retweet from the Wall Street Journal. One of the world's biggest gold bugs is getting crushed by the fall in gold prices. That's Eric Sprott. His flagship fund has dropped more than 50%. And Eric Pomboy, who's the president at Meridian Macro Research in New York, sent me a tweet saying that one man's trash is another man's treasure. Sprout has it right. Buy and hold gold and ignore the noise. Well, I'm sorry to say, Mr. Eric Pomboy, you're wrong. Sprout has lost 50% in his gold fund, which means he needs a 100% return just to get back even. Zero risk management skills. That's what that's called. I mean, there's no excuse for a professional money manager or even an individual investor to be taking a 50% bath. That's a bloodbath. So Sprott has lost 50%, which again means he needs a 100% return just to get back even. That's called dumb money management. Where are the stop losses? We've talked about this on our show before. You should be using stop losses on your positions. This is called how we prevent our losses from escalating into catastrophic losses of that magnitude. So this is what smart investors do, and it's something that I highly recommend to all of our listeners. In fact, that's one of the 10 tips that we have in a free report that I've done at ETF Guide on 10 trading tips with ETFs, and that's one of them, is to have a stop loss order. You can follow me again at Index Show. At Index Show is my Twitter handle. If you ever miss our regular radio broadcast, you can pick up our free podcast. It's available at iTunes. Just search under the Index Investing Show. And while you're there, rate our show. Give us 5 stars. Tell us how you think, how you feel about our program. You can also pick us up on YouTube. Again, just search under the Index Investing Show. So early in the program, we talked about gold and the 2004 New York Yankees. I did some comparisons. I mean, looking back to what happened in October of 2004, the Yankees had this incredible 3-0 lead, and they lost the World Series. They blew it. They blew that lead to their arch rivals, the Boston Red Sox, and we see a very similar epic collapse happening with gold. After racking up 144% gain from late 2008 to mid-2011, and late 2008 is when the Federal Reserve's QE, or quantitative easing, began, that's when gold really began to rocket higher. But take a look at what's happened since mid-2011. Gold prices have crashed over 35%. They have forfeited that early lead that over other asset classes or over other investment categories. So that's very similar to what the New York Yankees did in 2004. And really, it's a warning sign that of deflation, not just in gold, but you take a look at all the other commodities as a group. Ticker symbol GCC is the ETF that follows the CRB index, a basket of 17 different commodities. And you see, since 2008, ticker symbol GCC is posting a negative return. So that's called deflation, ladies and gentlemen, not inflation, as inflationists would like you to believe. So gold has been a sucker's paradise, which means profits, big profits, for those of you that have been short. We've talked about this. Ticker symbol DUST, that's the direction, gold miner bear 3X shares, ahead by over 102% since February, and continuing to outperform and doing quite well. So be on the right side of the market. That's the message. Well, that does it for another episode of the Index Investing Show. Join us again next week, same time, same station. And until we meet again, may the market indexes be with you.
The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily that of our advertisers, sponsors, or broadcast partners. The discussion of investing is general and should not be construed as investment advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. Listeners are responsible for their own investment decisions and results. Before investing in mutual funds or ETFs, always consult a prospectus for risk, charges, expenses, and other information. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Past performance is not indicative of future results. No reproduction or dissemination of the Index Investing Show is permitted without the expressed written consent of its producers.